AG1 is a comprehensive and convenient blend of over 70 high-quality ingredients. And what that means is each morning when I wake up, before I do anything else, I drink AG1 to set me up for the day. It keeps me clear-headed, full of energy, and focused on whatever I need to do, like writing the fighting cock, for example. One scoop, once a day, before breakfast, and that's it. I've actually found that I've not been needing coffee in the morning to get me started. I've still been drinking coffee, because I love coffee, but it's not because it's like a necessity to do so. AG1 is made out of the highest quality ingredients subject to the strictest manufacturing standards. AG1 is NSF certified for sport, and this process involves exhaustive testing and verification that every serving of AG1 is exactly what you see on the label. If you want to take ownership of your health, try AG1 and get a free 1 year supply of vitamin D and 5 free AG1 travel packs for your first purchase. Go to drinkag1.com/thefightingcock. That's drinkag1.com/thefightingcock to get started. And to help the podcast. Thank you very much. Have a great day and enjoy the show.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
It's the fighting. It's the fighting. Cock. It's the fighting. It's the fighting. Cock.
A camel chutney.
Hello, welcome to episode 12, season 12 of the Fighting Cock podcast, joined by Ricky and Cal, and you know, what a wonderful time to be alive. Like, I feel great about everything. Everything's fantastic. You know, we don't have to really dig deep into anything, really. All we've got to do is enjoy ourselves for the next an hour. Cal?
Might as well just do a preview, like, for Frankfurt.
Yeah, do a preview for Frankfurt. If you're a patron of Fighting Cock, you will already know that there is a preview out there for it. We don't fuck about, right?
We don't go,
like, oh, we've got beat by Arsenal, therefore we're not making any content. Although, I just, after the Arsenal game, I was like, I can't do the instant reaction. I just didn't want to. Anyway, so it is what it is, and we will, as grown men, deal with it in a sensible way. And that means not talking about it straight away, because I want to talk to Cal quickly about the boxing at the weekend. Conor Benn and Chris Eubank are fighting. Cal runs the Below the Belt podcast, which is a boxing podcast. Go and listen to that. It's good. But just quickly, what do you think is going to happen, Cal?
Eubank is a career middleweight. He's boxed at super middleweight, whereas Conor Benn is a career welterweight. So for people that aren't hardcore boxing fans, that's about a stone in difference in terms of weight. So about 13, 14 pounds in terms of weight difference. So I would think Eubank, unless he complete, there's a catch weight this weekend, so it's 157 pounds, which is three pounds under middleweight. Unless Eubank completely fucks the weight and he's drained and is not fit to be in the ring, Eubank's going to stop him in eight rounds.
Do you make anything of, like, Eubank walking around eating burgers and chicken and that shit?
I think he's filmed that stuff months ago.
Oh, what, he knew that the fight was happening?
I think a lot of that stuff, because he posted a video of him at Salt Bae, you know, that guy who does the thing with the salt, yeah, and the steaks and all that stuff. He posted a video of that yesterday, of him at Salt Bae's restaurant, and he was at that restaurant about 3-4 months ago. I think that's old shit. I think he's doing this stuff. I think he's posting old videos.
Rick, do you have any interest in the fight at all?
I do it as much as to see that the old rivalry of their dads, and then to see the sons come along and smack the shit out of each other. But I don't have a particular camp that I'm in. I like Eubank being a bit of a wanker, really, and just goading Ben and being that kind of like a, you know, very relaxed, because he knows he's going to smash him up, and just really kind of cranking the heat up on him. I like that shit, so I'll be watching definitely.
All right, good. Let's deal with the matter at hand, and we just have to do that, because there's nothing else you can do. And we've fucking been here before, and they've been there before. You win and lose games. Like, North London derbies are won and lost. Like Arsenal could be bottom of the league, or Spurs could be bottom of the league, and you know you go into a North London derby and it's not going to be easy. And this game wasn't easy. It was fucking horrible to go through. But there were parts where I thought Spurs were on top, and there are parts where it fell apart. And those moments where it fell apart, similar to the one the game we had at White Hart Lane, you know, in May, whenever it was we played, it wasn't dissimilar the way the game went. Anyway, we got a question from Peter Smith. He says, after a defeat to them lot, Spurs are dead to me until the next game. Notifications, podcasts off, memories wiped, like they didn't even exist. Is this okay, don't you think? The Fighting Cock is the only one I'll allow myself to listen to just to stimulate my numbness. Ricky, what do you turn off when all's gone to shit?
Yeah, I try to. I do try to, but because I'm a Tottenham fan, I will naturally just go back for more. But for me, on this occasion, I was particularly interested to hear other pods, articles, seeing what people were seeing on Twitter, because I'm going to get fucking pelters for this, and that's cool, because I felt that in the first half, on how we've played previously and how Conte sets up his team and how Arteta plays up his team, I felt like this, it was going to be, the game went as I thought it would.
In the opening stages,
yeah. Yeah, I thought that, well, I knew they'd have a lot of possession. I knew they would be attacking us wave after wave. I knew that they would be putting balls in from the channel, cute little flicks to try and undo us and get between the lines. And then I also knew that from when Tottenham have played City, Liverpool, and even teams that probably haven't deserved it, that we've, you know, gone to like a flat back five, waiting for our chance to steal the ball and then spring quickly. And once we did, there was there's a fair few times where I thought we had the better, more clearer chances. And I also thought that like part of our game plan would be to frustrate them, as long as, you know, they don't score early doors, so their tails go up even more. That if we just kept them at arm's length, which we have done for against a lot of teams this season and last season, if we reduce them to pot shots and long range shots and fucking just wanging the ball in, that we would be all right. And the ball rolled along to Partey, and 99 times out of 100, right, that goes in row Z. And then, so you would normally just say, all right, then have a shot.
Rick,
and
can I throw this at you? I'm sorry to cut you, because we had a point, right, in the running order.
Okay.
If Partey hadn't scored that weldy, which, like you said, 99 times out of 100, that doesn't hit the top bins.
Yeah.
Lloris hadn't fucked up that save, which you've seen him save many, many times, where he's pushed it wide. He saved attempts that were so much more difficult than that. And Royale hadn't been red carded, the game would have been different. I generally think that. Like, the narrative coming out of this game is that Arsenal outplayed us, they dominated us. That, if you go by the first half, which is where the game was in the balance. Most the commentators were saying at half time that Conte would have been happier out of the two. It's just, it starts the next game, the next half, Arsenal are in their pomp. If they force the mistake by Lloris, and then obviously Royale gets sent off and the game's over within, you know, 10 minutes of the second half. Is that significant, or did Arsenal, in your opinion, Rick, did they force those situations? They made it happen. They generated their own luck. What do you think of it?
Exactly like what I said at the beginning. The reason why I went after more info on the game to see if I had seen things totally different.
What did you find, Rick?
Well, like you said, a lot of the papers are saying Arsenal dismantled Tottenham and loads of other things. And I was like, for the first half, that was not the case. The game was totally in the balance. And personally, I thought with our clearer cut chances, that we, Son pushed the ball through to Richarlison, it's slightly wide. There was a couple where I think Perisic should have done better and had a shot. There was a couple of other bits where just the final third, the final pass was just a bit off. And in the second half, I felt like us naturally, our teams are fitter, can run more, and would be a bit more consistent in that front. And I just felt that moving more into the latter stages of the game, that's where our chances would come, because that's how we play on the counter attack. And one of those balls would work out for us. But as you said, that Lloris, I still don't know actually what happened. I think there was a bit where Lloris probably thought that the ball's gone to Romero, the ball's come back at him. Mm. Would he be done for a penalty if because it's a pass back or like a free kick there where they would, you know, almost certainly score? I don't know. So he's panicked, and within that panic, that ball's just gone under him. And then Jesus, as any good striker, you know, you have to be alert to every type of opportunity you get. And then obviously with that, the momentum goes back with them. You know, they score 3 minutes after the second half, the tail's up, and then the Royale tackle happens. And after that, it's just, you're just onto a hiding to nothing, really. You ain't going to get anything out of the game.
Cal, what anything to add?
The only thing I would add is after the equaliser, after Harry Kane scored the penalty, they looked rattled, Arsenal, and we was all over them.
I thought they
looked rattled, and I said to the guys, it was before the red card, even when they scored the second goal, I wasn't worried, because I said to the guys, if we score, if we equalise, we'll win, because they've not had many situations this season where they've had to really fight. And you saw that after the first equaliser, they panicked. And we started having chance after chance and started creating, you know, opportunities in their half. And we got to half time. I didn't want half time because we was really coming on. And then Lloris throws one in the net. And like you said, Royale, which was... I don't know about... Are we going to talk about the red card in a minute?
Yeah, no, stop now? No, we'll do it now. Do it now.
When he did the tackle, I thought, oh yeah, yellow card. It didn't even enter my head that that was going to be a red card.
But
when you can't imagine there were.
But when you saw the replay, you knew it was. I did. Did you not? Did you not think it was a red card?
No. Like absolutely not. I didn't think it was a red card.
All day, every day, they get given. Like you got.
It looked like nothing.
I'm not saying that Emerson Royale intentionally went to like put a studs up challenge into the side of his leg. I think he was genuinely trying to play the ball. He's not a nasty player. He's not known for his spitefulness. He's not even very strong in the tackle. He's just, you know, he plays football in the spirit of the game. Some horrible cliche that I couldn't think of any other way else to describe it. But he's not that bloke. So I don't think he intended to do it. But as soon as I saw the replay, I was like, he's gone. And then just after that, the red card went up. You can't legislate for that stuff. You can't legislate for your players who have shown quality, less so Emerson, but especially Lloris, have shown quality in dealing with those moments. As a manager, and we're going to come on, I don't want to go too deep into this because the second part of this podcast is about Conte and the feeling around him and you know the situation he finds himself in, which isn't significant, but we're going to talk about it anyway. You can't legislate for those things. And... you know, it's the minute Emerson Royale does that, it's over. The game's over. It doesn't matter how good.
I felt it was harsh. I felt it was harsh when I first saw it. You know, I looked at the tackle and it wasn't like it was a duel. It was like 50-50 tackle, and like he's just gone in or he's gone in with his studs up or anything like that. It just looked like Martinelli was just running away from him, and he, as he's like trying to catch up to him, his kind of like legs come up and then his foot's gone over. And because it's happened quite high, you think studs are showing, it's on that part of the leg, red card. But I don't know, man. I mean, you look at it on VAR and you'd be like, okay, yeah, that's a red card. I can see why it's been given, but also I'm kind of like, the intention, I didn't feel that like the intention was there, and so that's why I'm a little bit, I'm not going to be sitting and being like, that wasn't a red card, they should, you know, get it turned over or anything like that. You know, it's done and dusted now. But the, you know, it was Martinelli, wasn't it, that he tackled or tried to tackle, but he was so far away. I think he was running away from the goal anyway. And it was so high up the pitch. It's such a fucking brainless tackle to make.
But also, if you nick the ball at that, in that stage, we're on the break and we're looking dangerous. So I get it, but Bentancur benefited twice against Leicester from making similar challenges. Similar in the proximity of the defender, our defender, and being Bentancur or Emerson Royale and the opposition. If you'd have nicked that ball, if you'd have found a way of getting his foot round the ball, not that he had much chance of doing it, so it probably was idiotic, but if he had, then we'd have been on a break and Arsenal would have been lost. So it's like, I get it. And bearing in mind, you can imagine Conte and his coaching staff getting into him. So if you have this opportunity, if you can get the ball in there, that's probably what's going through his head. It's not like, I've just got to make this challenge. It's not as simple as that, I don't think. Not saying that you said it was, Rick. I'm just sort of breaking it down a little bit. It feels like it was foolish and it was stupid and it did end the game. Because like you said, Cal, there was loads more football to play and you weren't really worried even when we went down to 2-1. It was frustrating, but you felt like we could get into it. And we just didn't.
Why does Lloris always fucking throw one in the net against? He'll always make, like, my mate, who is a massive gooner, he'll always dig out Lloris, say, oh, shit keeper, blah, blah, blah. Oh, standard Lloris again. And I have to kind of feel like I have to fight Lloris's corner. And I think Lloris is a great goalkeeper, and he's one of the most consistently best goalkeepers in the Prem. And not the fact that, obviously, he's been at the club 10 years, but he is a highly rated keeper, so he must just see the snippets of Match of the Day where, obviously, when there is a howler, he'll notice it. But then they always happen. It feels like they happen a lot against Arsenal, or there's some shaky kind of like punching out or something.
I'm never too confident when the ball gets played back to Lloris. Like, I rate him, and I think like the fact that he's going to be playing for Spurs next year as well is a good thing. But I do feel a little bit shaky when he's kicking out. And
he's kicking his shit. Fucking shit. No, honestly. Like, he just boots it out all the time. There was a time in the first half where he chipped it into the middle and it just went straight to Partey. I was like, what the fuck are you doing, mate? Like, honestly, and there were times where we are trying to do, obviously, what Conte wants us to do, and we're trying to play it out. But sometimes I'm just like, we just get some of the pressure off of us and just take the ball up just to fucking whack the cunt straight up there.
We've got a question here from Sean Cray. He says, if your life was on Tottenham not winning the North London Derby and you knew you'd drop dead at the final whistle if we won, you're watching the game and Harry Kane scores a 30-yard screamer with the last kick of the game, would you cheer before you drop dead?
You probably would. It's muscle memory. It's reflex, isn't it? But at the same time, would you be sat there? You probably would be sat there watching the game going, fuck, I'm going to die. Fuck, I'm going to die.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So as Harry Kane sort of lines himself and his leg goes back and he connects with it sweetly and it's flying through the air, you're like, no. And as it hits net, yeah. And then you're like...
I would just... What a way to go. Just laugh because it's... Like, how kind of, like, standard, like, the one time that you don't want that to happen, you spend your entire life praying for that to happen, and then the one time you don't, you fucking die, Tottenham kills you, Harry Kane kills you. It's like, well, it couldn't have been written any more better, really,
perfect,
could it?
Isn't it? Whenever something good happens, it's tinged with a bit of sadness. I'd be fuming and really happy. Like, my best mate's dead. But Harry Kane has just scored a screamer, so swings and roundabouts. Did you see Spence's comments on social media that it could have been so different if, I don't know what she... I
mean, that was his sister, wasn't it?
Yeah, his sister.
Yeah, that was his sister.
So obviously this after Emerson Royale gets sent off, his sister's saying, yeah, it could have been so different. What the fuck does she know?
Do you think he would have had to, after, do you think he would have had to say to her after, look, I know you love me, sis, and I know you got my back, but like, you're just making shit worse.
Yeah, you're really not helping.
Because Conte's going to see that, and like, it's just not, it's not going to help.
Well, yeah, you're only...
Or do you think he messaged you and said, look, sis, can you do me a big one here? Like, can you just...
Because you know, this has happened so many times before. Like, using social media to influence a manager to get them into the team does nothing but create a wall. Like, so if that was my brother or sister had done that, and I was Jed Spence, I'd be fucking fuming at her or him. What good could that have done? Like, what? Like, firstly, it would have made very little difference. It could have been so different. Like, all right, so Jed Spence might not have stamped on Martinelli's leg, and he might not have got sent off. But would Jed Spence's inclusion, if you just take it on basis of the fact that he's done very well in the Championship and the League Cup run, or an FA Cup run, whatever it was, would his inclusion have made a huge amount of difference in this game? It may be that Jed Spence's sister knows everything about Jed Spence and knows how good he is, and it would have made a difference. But I'm backing in this argument between Jed Spence's sister and, you know, Champions League winner Antonio Conte, and Serie A winner and Premier League winner Antonio Conte. I'm backing him in this instance. So just shut your fucking mouth.
I don't know what, I saw it, and I don't know if it's the snowflake in me, but I thought, oh God, she's going to get some pelters. And I actually thought, I hope Tottenham fans aren't giving her pelters, because that's just not the sort of fan base but
you're opening yourself up to it by saying this stuff. It wouldn't have been any different. The likelihood that Jed Spence would not have made a single... Maybe he had done, but it's a punt. It doesn't like mean anything. You're just creating problems where they're not any.
Like, but
someone take your Twitter away.
Yeah, fair. No, I get your point, and you're right. And you're right, she does need to stop doing it, because you can't win. You're not helping him. No matter what, you're not helping him. But was there not a little part of either one of you guys a little bit happy that we don't have to see Emerson, and that we might actually get to see somebody else at right wing back for a couple of games? What, is he going to get a free game ban? I am. Yeah. I'm happy that we're going to get to see somebody else.
Are you happy that you're... That's a good question. Are you happy that you're not going to... You're going to see someone else just because it's not Emerson Royal? Or are you happy that it might be Jed Spence because you haven't seen him play?
I want to see someone other than Emerson Royal, because a lot of our attacking kind of play is based off of our wing backs, and he's terrible going forward. He's a very good defender, and he's a very good athlete, but he's...
Yeah, I know what you're saying. So if Jed Spence got into those positions, and Emerson Royal had like three or four where he'd put himself in a great position, the play had been switched, obviously a tactic that Conte had been put in place. And we've seen that from Emerson many, many times. He's always in the right place to receive a ball. And that shouldn't be undervalued, because I think sometimes it does get undervalued that Emerson Royal has done everything he can to get in the position where he can cross, and he might not deliver in the way that Jed Spence, we hope that he can. So if Jed Spence does everything before the fact that he gets into the position where he can finish or deliver that ball, if he can get to that, then it would be really great to see him. Really excited. I'd be really excited to see him.
I did lose my head quite a few times where...
When you say lose your head, what did you do? What happened?
Oh, the room went blue from fucking swearing.
Did you thump the sofa?
No, I didn't. I just let out some like guttural swearing, and my kids were there. My youngest took her beanbag out into the garden, sat on it with a blankie, and put her headphones on because I was just going absolutely mad.
When that happens, Rick, do you feel guilty? Do you feel like bad?
Not really, no. Because
it's to be more resilient.
Yeah, and there's you know, it's 90 minutes, like all day, every day. You can watch YouTube on the big TV, and all I hear is fucking YouTube going, and I'm like, it's like literally
this is my time.
Cutting right through me. So when I get my time, just let me have my time. And she was on her hoverboard as well, and she came into the front room, and she like hovered in.
What do you mean the hoverboard?
You know, like your 2 feet on the little hoverboard things. She come wheeling in.
Was that irritating when you were trying to watch the game?
And she had YouTube on my missus's phone. She's like, Dad, what's the score? Oh, is Arsenal? J- just can you get out, please? Just get out because I'm gonna lose.
I'm gonna hit you. Yeah. Say it. I'm gonna hit you.
Yeah, I will.
I'm gonna hit you, my child, who I love deeply, but you don't understand what this is about.
Just get out.
Get on your hoverboard and go.
You feel like
take these cigarettes. And
you
go.
Feel like yeah. Just take the cigarettes. I imagine that about 2:30 on Saturday that the phone line for Samaritans spiked quite a bit around that time.
100%.
Sonny copped some blue words from me as well. Lost my fucking head with him. Yeah, misplaced passing. That really heavy pass. Yeah. Oh, fucking hell, man. It was just so just play it there. Just get the weight of the pass right. And it just went too far. And there was a couple of times things like that happen. And, oh, man, I just fucking let rip at the telly. I was just like, fuck. Fuck.
We've got a question from Nathan Pleven. He says, please dissect the Spence situation. Doherty looked like he won a competition on the back of a Rice Krispie box, same as Royal. Is Conte not playing Spence to prove a point that he wasn't his signing because he's afraid he'll be our best option and he'll be proved wrong?
No.
No one believes that, Nathan.
That's ridiculous. That's ridiculous.
No, that's not what Nathan believes. And if it is what you believe, then you're mad. Do you think if there was a tool at Conte's disposal, given the fact that he's been described as a born winner by almost every player he's ever, you know, coached, do you think that if Jed Spence wouldn't improve our right-hand side, that he wouldn't play him out of, ego? Or there is a lot of fans out there that just want to see Jed Spence play because we haven't seen him play. He knows. Yeah. He knows. He has to know. Go on, sorry.
Do you remember as well, like when I think it was when Doherty came on, I think there was I don't know if it was a pass back, but he played the ball right across the front, like where Hugo was. I don't know who he was passing it back to. He was stuck in the corner, so he flashed the ball back across our own box, and someone didn't get it and went straight to a fucking Arsenal player. I was just like, again, lost my head. Like, I just kept losing my head during this. That's what I mean. just throughout this game, there was misplaced passes. It was just that wasn't the final third, but there were just little bits that were slightly off. And if they would have worked out, then we would have scored and it would be having a totally different conversation. And I know that's football and I know it's a game of inches and all that, but that is why I just feel like I am not. Afterwards, I was fucking inconsolable, as everyone was. But why I can look back now and try and find the positives out of it, I just don't feel like we were. Yeah, they attacked us a lot, but they didn't really do anything. We kept them at arm's length, and I just felt. I don't think it was all that bad, is what I'm saying. Like, everything that I'm reading and that I'm led to believe and stuff like that, I just don't think it was how we played in the first half particularly. It was that bad.
If we maintain...
Hurtful, yes, but...
Yeah, if we maintain this form, we would have lost, four games this season? We'd have won 20 and drawn 8. Like, that is a fucking unreal season. So let's not lose our fucking heads, because we're going to come on to Conte. I've got some ideas or things I want to talk about in terms of Conte shortly, so I don't want to say it too soon, but just, you got to calm down. We've got a question here from Steve Bunyan, or a statement rather, says, first league defeat since April, although there was the summer sort of pre-season to put into that. Some fans really need a reality check. Conte hasn't even been at Spurs for a year, yet we lose to those deluded idiots down the road, and everyone should just calm down. Bearing in mind, Arteta has been in charge of Arsenal. This will be his fourth season. Conte hasn't been there a year. They've spent £223 million without recouping a single penny. And what in this moment, on that game, they're above us. And we, as we've splayed out many times in this podcast already, it could have been different. So just fucking calm down. Just wait. The football is so... Oh, we're going to talk about Conte.
They may have won the battle. They've not won the war. And the thing is, with this game, it's not going to define our season. And last season, their loss to us defined their season and they missed out on the Champions League. So that's the positives that I'm taking out of it. And no way am I sweeping under the carpet, like Flav's already alluded to, that we're going to talk about Conte, the way we're playing, formations and stuff like that. And I'm not saying everything is rosy and, you know, we should just be, just kind of be over it. I am hurting just like everyone else
is. Yeah, we all are.
But I just don't think it was all that bad. That's what I'm saying.
It's not all that bad, is it, Kel?
No, not at all. Like you said already, you know, it's the first game we've lost this season. And we had a player sent off. And you know what? When Emerson Royal got sent off, I thought, just don't get pumped. Just don't get
flashed. Yeah.
You know, and then 3-1, when it was 3-1 in stoppage time, I was almost rubbing my hands together. I thought, yeah, that'll do. We, you know, the game's been over for half an hour. So 3-1, is that all you could do with 10 men? Is that actually all you could do? And we made all five subs as well in one.
I spoke to the Arsenal fan this morning because I do this show on Betfix's YouTube channel, Last Fan Standing. Yeah. We had Lee Judges on there earlier, and obviously I was dreading the fact that I haven't seen sit in front of an Arsenal fan and watch him gloat. And you know, when you lose a North London derby, you have to just take your medicine. It's horrible. It's fucking horrible. And react in any way you think you should react. It's horrible having to sit in front of them. And many people are going to work and they're having to deal with their gooner workmates giving it bollocks. Ricky, I'm sure you've had to deal with some stuff on YouTube, on WhatsApp as well. Yeah. You know, this is part of being a part of a great rivalry, is that sometimes it doesn't go your way. And you have to show steel and respect for yourself and not be a fucking cuck and let their opinions affect you in such a way. Give them bollocks. Fuck them. Whatever. You might be good now. You might have spent all that money. You might have been, you know, Arteta might be coming good. Bearing in mind he's finished 8th and 5th, and bearing in mind... There is an absolute argument that Arsenal might not finish top four this season. Right now, it doesn't seem likely, but football is such a long... And there's a massive World Cup in the middle of it. You know, so just fucking... You know, fuck them. Whatever. Don't give a fuck.
At some point, Europa League football's got to kick in for them. They've played one game in Europe. That's going to start putting a lot of work into that small squad that they've got.
Yeah,
they've got Europa League to think about. They've got to start, you know, playing tougher teams as well. They've had a pretty, you know, yes, they've played Spurs and they've played Manchester United, but they've not had the toughest start. You know, they've got a lot of tough games to play. I agree with you, Flav. I think we still think we'll finish above them, and they've got to come to Tottenham. They've got to come to Tottenham whenever that is, February, March, whatever the fuck. They've got to come there. And I'm pretty confident we'll give it straight back to them on and off the pitch.
Well, just bearing in mind, boys, right, that we have to play Brighton away, which isn't like they're fourth in the league. They've just been... Where did they get beat by? No, did they get beat? They drew
Liverpool the weekend.
Drew, of course, 3-0 at Liverpool, right? So they if we can beat them and Arsenal lose a play in Liverpool at home, which isn't... That's generally what happens in these ties. Then we're a point behind them again. And everyone's asking questions about Conte and singing Arteta's praises. And I get it because of the way they're playing. But the league exists in its... And what's beautiful about the league is it's just finite. It doesn't matter who's playing well. It doesn't matter how poorly you're playing, how lucky you're being. Whatever it is, the league points you to exactly where each team is. And if we do beat Brighton and Arsenal do lose against Liverpool, we're a point behind them, right up their arse. And no matter how happy they all are, and then if they get beat by City, I mean, it's fucking such a long season. And bearing in mind, they've done brilliantly well to win as many games as they have early on. And they probably are title contenders. But that doesn't mean that they'll finish above us. And if they do, then we'll have to deal with it. But Spurs are... Something's happened to Tottenham as well. That's all I'd say. Go on, Cal, sorry.
No, not much more to add, really. You know, like you said, it's a long season. Football could change very, very quickly. We're going to see what they're about when they lose a couple, when they, you know, lose two or three in a row. We're still in the Champions League and they're not. We've still got, a great group of players. Kulusevski to come back. He was a big loss on Saturday, wasn't he, Kulusevski?
Yeah.
And you know what? I thought Skip, I really liked Skip when he came on. And it's been a long time coming for him to come back and play for Spurs again. But he came on and he played like it was a derby. And I don't mean he came on and, you know, he was trying to smash people, but he just came on and he gave it his absolute best effort, even though the game was over. And yeah, I think there's still a lot of positives for Tottenham.
100%, 100%. This doesn't define us. We just need to keep our heads. Like, if you're doubting Conte, you need to keep your head. And we're going to come on to Conte very shortly. But before we do, we've got obviously our sponsors of the pod this year, NordVPN. Very thankful of them for backing us through the year. They didn't actually. We started out this relationship as doing a little test run at the start of the season. 4 episodes. If they liked what we did and the fact that you guys have started to sign up to them, meant that they would back us. And not only did they back us, they backed us for the entirety of the season. So I really want to thank them for it. If you want your internet activity secured, if you want your wife not to know what you're up to, right? If you've got a rental lock in your house and you want to just go into the bathroom for a tug, then NordVPN will provide you all the things that you need to be provided with in order to do that. This is a man who is speaking from experience. I trust you. Trust me. Rick.
Yeah.
At a bank lately?
Yes. This morning.
This morning?
Yeah.
Good for you. Yes.
Always a good thing to clean the pipes on a Monday. Get you set up for the week.
The most important thing about NordVPN is it provides you security. Whatever you're doing with your phone, like, bear in mind the fact that the way we use our phones and for internet banking, for communicating with your missus, your friends, whatever it might be, NordVPN protects you from all of that shit. You're not going to get someone getting into your phone or your email while using your phone or your computer and fishing you, or we talked about it the other day, didn't we, about the stuff you were scared of, I did an interview with the guy from Ruben, we did this podcast about, he was a professor at Oxford, and he was talking about a way for people, there's bots and AI out there that can listen and track your voice within 10 seconds of having a conversation with them. So imagine you've got a bot that rings you up and they go and you can't hear them. You go, hello, who is this? Who's there? Within 10 seconds of hearing that, they have all the information they need to replicate your voice to have a genuine conversation with your mum. Like, imagine your mum not knowing that it's you talking to her. That's going to be a reality.
So, like Terminator.
Like Terminator.
Yeah.
So Norby,
when he's got the spike thing through the carton of milk through his face, and he's like all mash up. Yeah. I've been bang on that NordVPN this week.
What have you been using it for?
I've been doing this. I've been trying to download Weird and Wonderful Things for Ricky, basically, for him to watch, because he likes all these quirky documentaries that you can't watch over here. So I have to go hunting to go find them. And so I'll jump onto the Luxembourg server and I'll go and have a little hunt around for all these documentaries. And then bear in mind also this weekend, you know, Eubank Ben, you may not want to do the whole DAZN thing. You know, you might want to
watch it with that is that you've got to subscribe to DAZN, which costs £8 or £9 a month, and then on top of that you have to subscribe to The Fight, which is a pay-per-view fight, which ends up not only you paying a subscription but you're also paying for the fight itself. So what's the cost of The Fight, Cal?
£27.
Fuck, really?
Jesus. Yeah.
What, on top of?
No, so what they're saying is, if you're a new customer,
I'm not a new customer.
Yeah, so you have to pay £20 or £20. But if you're a new customer, you have to pay. You get a month's DAZN and The Fight for £27, which is fucking wild.
All right. So what you can do with NordVPN is that you can set yourself in a completely different country. Go to Spain, wherever it might be. No, it's called Canada, where DAZN's like massively popular. If you just, all you need to do is select, it's literally, it appears on your phone as or your laptop as a map. And you go over, you scroll over to Canada. It takes 2 seconds. You click on their server over there, and then you access the deals that the Canadian people have got. And you don't have to pay £27 plus £8 a month to DAZN to watch Eubank and Ben this weekend. Although we do have a friend who works for Matchroom who will be fuming at this conversation. But that is the beauty of NordVPN. Anyway, grab your exclusive NordVPN deal by going to nordvpn.com/fightingcock to get a huge discount on your NordVPN plan. 4 months free if you pay for a year up front. It's completely free, risk-free rather. 30-day money-back guarantee. If you're not happy with what you're getting in that 30 days, and there's so much you can do in that 30 days, then you can cancel it and they give you your money back. Part two. Right, Conte. So for the sake of conversation here, Ricky, we're going to state that Conte knows more about football than we will ever, ever, ever know. He'll forget more about football than we will ever learn. Can you find a reason to be critical of Conte at this stage at all?
I don't know if the word is being critical of him. There's frustration, like you said about Spence, and like we've been talking about Spence. I was really excited when we signed him, seeing how he played for Forest and his games against Arsenal, and there's been some other really good performances that I would have liked to have seen him over Royale or Doherty. Once, twice, 30 minutes here, 15 minutes there, just a little bit of, I don't know, just to show something. And with his ball carrying skills, and also how we're set up with 3-4-3 and our wing backs pushing forward and pinning the opposition wing backs back, and then obviously how we work the ball when we get there. Your wing backs have to be fucking amazing. They have to be great, because not only do they have to keep on bombing forward, but then positionally and defensively they have to be quick and get back and preempt what's going to happen when something breaks quickly. So with a young player like Spence, super enthusiastic, super quick, everything that I've seen that I've loved, it is deeply frustrating that I haven't seen him play under Conte since we've signed him. And like I said, like even just a 15 minute here or 10 minutes might not even be the whole game. I find that frustrating. I really do. But to say that, to be critical of Conte about it, again, like you said earlier, he trains with the lad every single day. He knows his limitations. He knows how to bed players in. And he's just only a little bit more experienced than me in that front of training world-class players.
Okay, I've gone.
But there are other things that have slightly, I found, frustrating. Substitutions as well. You know, we're coming up to the 75th minute, 80 minutes, and then he decides to bring a defender on when we're chasing the game. You're like, shit, boy, like, what? Like, I ain't going to question you, but fucking hell, man. Like, what are you doing? So I would say, yeah, frustration or critical of what he's doing, but generally, he has played the same formations and the same way of playing for Inter, for Chelsea, and he's got results. And there are times that we are going to watch Conte, and we're going to watch Conte's Tottenham, and we're going to watch us play against lesser teams, and we are going to look defensive still. We are going to keep teams at bay, and we are going to win it in midfield. We're going to win it 1-0 and keep it tight. Or there's going to be very, very tight games, high risk, high reward. And when it doesn't happen, like, and against Arsenal and a team like Arsenal and what the occasion meant, it's going to hurt, right? And where we've had some games so far, we haven't looked like world beaters. And just like I said, we're just keeping the other teams at bay, but we're still picking up the points, conserving energy, whatever it might be. But this is the way that Conte plays. And if you deeply hate this counter-attacking, quick transition keeping it kind of nice and tight, and you know, more defensive football, then it's going to be a long season for you, really.
Cal, where are you at?
Ah, Conte's an amazing manager. He's a brilliant coach, and I there's no one else I'd want to be our manager.
Yeah, what's right the option now? If you don't think Conte's good enough, then who the fuck do you think he's good enough for Spurs? If Conte isn't good enough, who do you think you are? Like, if you not watched Spurs,
that's entitlement, isn't it?
Oh, man, this is it.
That who would have dreamed last season when Conte took over that he would get us into the Champions League?
No chance.
I don't think any of us thought we were going to get into the Champions League. And I remember the West Ham game at home last season and being in Beavertown with some of you guys and saying, I just want to beat Arsenal. I just wanted to beat Arsenal in the derby. And then that was it. If we finished fucking top seven, whatever. And we got into the Champions League. And then we've gone and signed a load of good players. And we've had a pretty good season. We've lost our first fucking game of the season after 8 games. We've just lost our first game. Yeah. Yes, like you, Rick, I agree. There's things. I would love to have seen Spence got 20 minutes here or there, or Matt Doherty get 20 minutes here or there, because I'm not in love with Emerson's attacking kind of abilities. They're not great. And, you know, but I think he has been kind of, there's been certain kind of situations that have let him down. I think Romero's not had a great season. I think Romero's had a poor season.
Oh.
Yeah, I do. I think he's had a poor season. But then Sanchez started against Leicester. And I thought, you know what? He actually deserves to start against Leicester. And then he had a complete fuck up and gave away a penalty. So you just have to trust what Conte's doing and, you know, kind of our better players, really. But, you know, he's got Kane firing. Kane is playing amazing. I feel like he scores every single game.
Well, he's got seven Premier League goals. Is it seven?
Exactly. And I actually think he managed the Sun situation perfectly. I actually think he managed it perfectly. And I think a lot of us were going, just take Sun out, just take Sun out. And when Sun wasn't scoring, and then he did take him out against Leicester, then puts him on as a sub where he's really fucking angry that he's got dropped, I'm doing air quotes, and he scores a hat-trick. And you can see Sun's back now. He's gone to the international break and scored a couple there as well. I think that shows how well Conte's managed the Sun situation. So yes, there has been times where I've been frustrated. You know, I think we should have won the West Ham game, for example. I think, you know, we played so well in the first 35-40 minutes. We should have won that game, but we didn't. And, you know, it's like you said, Flav, he's barely been there a year. He's not even been there a year yet. And we're a month off of that. And look at it now, from 6 months from now, I think we'll be in a much better position than we were this time, you know, at the end of last season. I really do.
Yeah, just on that, on Harry Kane, he's got seven in eight games. Like, I know he's not Haaland, and no one will be. We've got a great question that we can end this podcast on about Haaland. But yeah, we are in a good position. It doesn't feel like that because we have to deal with the fact that Arsenal are beating us. But we are in a good position, and we're in this position because of Conte. We're in this position because Daniel Levy appointed Paratici, who convinced Conte to be our manager. And without him, to even question him at this point is mental, in my opinion. Really is. It's... If we'd have got a draw against Arsenal, people would have been like doing backflips about him. Like at White Hart Lane, at home, when things are going well, all you can hear is, Antonio, that's all you can hear. Because fundamentally, 80-90% of the Spurs fan base know exactly what's up. And that is, there is no better manager to... last week, there was a question posed that Antonio Conte, can you tell us about the contract and being linked with Juve? And he said, it's disrespectful to Tottenham. It's disrespectful to me. I'm happy here. And then...
Fuck me. That's more adamant than Poch ever was about Man United. Fuck me.
I know, but and then like a week later, we've got a bad result against Arsenal, which could have gone another way if the stars aligned for Tottenham. And now it's like, well, is he the right man for the job? Like, fuck off. Of course he is. What do you want? If you don't think Antonio Conte is the right man for Tottenham, then what do you want, realistically? Other than saying Pep Guardiola. Like,
I think people want to see a free flowing.
They may want to see that
football. Yeah, I know. And like, for the way that Conte plays, it is not that. So you kind of just have to get used to it and just try and, I don't know, just you just got to get used to it. But like the thing is, with other managers that we've had in the past, like Harry Redknapp, and like you have, you know, the swashbuckling Tottenham, where we're just attacking all the time, and the subs that come on are attacking and just going after it. It doesn't really get you anywhere, really. It's been great to watch, and we've had some exciting games, but I'm at the point where I want a manager that is world-class and that will have perfect game management, know exactly how to pace the season out, how to deal with, big personalities within the team. And I don't think there is anyone out there as good as Conte. Like you're not going to obviously get Klopp, you're not going to get Pep. Like who else is out there that you want and that isn't already at a big team?
Yeah, man.
I just think, I don't know, he Conte's been there, he's done it, he knows how to do it. I think he probably knows that there'll be a section of the fan base that will be a bit disgruntled that we're not sweeping teams away, but you know, you don't kind of concern yourself with those opinions. You carry on doing what you've always done and be consistent and keep picking the points up.
I think people are sorry.
No, mate. I was going to move.
No,
on.
I just think there's, you know, people will talk about football. We've scored 19 goals in 8 Premier League games.
Not bad, is it?
We're not exactly boring, are we? I know, and I think there's probably some suggestions about, you know, the system, and they want to see him change the system as well. You know, he's quite rigid to the 3-4-3, which I understand, because I'd like to see 3 in the middle. You know, I thought, you know, at the weekend he could have played 3 in the middle, but Bissouma had a knock. He couldn't start. And Skip's coming back from a long-term injury. Matt Doherty's coming back from a long-term injury. There's a lot of things that are kind of going on at Tottenham. Kulusevski got injured in international break. Lucas has got a long-term injury. He's actually been quite unfortunate with injuries and squad options. And you know, at the weekend at Arsenal, that was their best team. That was their best team. I saw the team, I thought, yeah, it's their best team. And we've got all these injuries at the minute. So I think you've got to cut the guy some slack, really.
I don't think he deserves even to get any slack at all. Like, just,
no.
It's a nonsense. It's absolutely nonsense.
I think with the 3-5-2 thing, when we switched it against Leicester, we were two all at that point, and then we switched, and then we kind of swept them away with a Sonny masterclass. I'm always highly critical of managers when in League Cups where they make wholesale changes, 11 changes, and then we end up getting fucking pie in the face by bloody, I don't know, Portsmouth or something like that, because we've made that many changes and we've bought fucking a bloody Fazio in or something like that. Changing a formation that we've stuck with for like a season and a half against Arsenal at Arsenal to then switch it to 3-5-2 where we haven't really played it. For me, it's just fucking, it's suicide doing something like that. It's just too much of a risk. Stick to what you know. We've been picking up the points with this formation. Unbeaten. We've been tight. Yeah, exactly. Unbeaten. So just stick with it. Yeah, I would like us to see 3-5-2. And I think we have more of players in that central midfield area than we do up top in rotating that front three. And especially with Moura and Kulusevski out, I think we might see the 3-5-2 formation deployed a bit more now and just to start testing. And remember when everyone keeps going on about when Chelsea played Arsenal and then I think Chelsea got pumped and then he switched it and then they went on like a 13 or 14 game unbeaten run. You know, that could happen for us. But I just think for a North London derby to switch it there and then, for me, it's just too much of a risk.
Yeah, no, you can understand it completely. You can understand it completely. But there is this sort of seismic shift or opinion, seismic shift in opinion about what Spurs should do based on the fact that how well we've performed when we have done played a 3-5-2. So it'll be good to see, but you're right, Ricky. You don't go into a North London derby and just gamble. You have to give the players the benefit of the doubt and allow them to play in a system that they've been trained to play into. And if you look at the first half, as the commentators said, the happier of the two coaches would have been Conte, and that was a 3-4-3. without Kulusevski. And then
I did my ass, like my ass did flap a bit when he brought on the four subs in the second half, and I was like, that's a bit much, isn't it? Like, just changing them all at once, and I was just like, oh Jesus Christ, like,
yeah.
That is risky.
But he had planned to make that substitution before, or perhaps not four, but at least three, before Royale got injured. Royale made that stupid challenge. So we'll see. But let's round off the podcast here with something that isn't about Tottenham, but is about something that we all have to contend with, and a player that is going to cause us sort of a never-ending amount of pain in the next 4 or 5 years that he plays in the Premier League. Josh, he says, not a question, just the talking part, a point. The Haaland signing has killed the enjoyment of the Premier League for me. For years now, the odds of City winning the title were short, but now it seems inevitability. Sorry, excuse me. Yeah. Can't see a future where Spurs even get close, and that's depressing. What do you make of Cal? What do you make of the Haaland sign and how good he is? Because I've never seen, like, we watched Harry Kane be the man. Like he was like the rise of Shearer was similar to the rise of Harry Kane. What Haaland is doing is something else. He's a different level. For to be 21, 22, whatever he is, to be playing the way he does, being the specimen that he is, he's unreal, isn't he? They've sewn the Premier League up for 5 years, I think. I tweeted that when they signed him, and people were digging me out going, oh, just show some backbone. You can't deny evidence. You can't deny it.
I think statements have been made like that a lot over the Premier League years. I remember when Mourinho went to Chelsea, and they used to have that funny phone-in show on Sky Sports. I can't remember what it was called, but they had like a phone-in show and people would call in and talk about Premier League games or whatever. I can't remember. But I remember when Mourinho went there and he won the league the first time, and somebody said, Chelsea are going to win the league for the next 5 years. And they didn't.
Yeah, but this is different.
And we've said, yeah, it is different, because it's not just that, you know, Haaland's a fucking brilliant striker.
Guardiola.
It's also...
And the money.
It's Guardiola. Yeah, and they... I watched the game yesterday. I watched the City game yesterday. And it's not... You watch him and he's like, yeah, he's amazing. But they've got Kevin De Bruyne and Bernardo Silva. Bernardo Silva's so fucking good. Like, they sold David Silva and he's replaced him.
Yeah.
He's so good. And Jack Grealish looks like he's come along and, really, you know, he's having a better season now. But yeah, they probably will win the league. And do you know what? I don't find them... They're like the least offensive of the big six clubs, if you like.
There's no mirror. If Arsenal win the league this season, and they won't because of Man City, and hopefully they fall apart for various reasons we've outlined on this podcast. If they win the league, it's just them holding up a mirror ourselves, our own failures. If Man City wins the league, then you're like, well, of course they're going to win the league. Like it's almost like nice to have them there, because it means that Arsenal won't win the league. And the same with Chelsea, the amount of times that Chelsea and Man United have stopped Arsenal from winning the league in the past. But it isn't good for football.
For me, no. I don't think it's... I'm probably being a bit more too optimistic. But I don't feel like it's a foregone conclusion. Wasn't there a game where... I can't remember who it was now. Maybe City and Villa. I can't remember who it was. But it was a draw anyway. And Haaland was playing. So it's like... If they have a couple of games like that, a couple more games where they draw and they think they're going to walk it, or teams stick 11 men behind the ball and frustrate City, if we have one of those games where we go up to the Etihad, no one expects us to win, and we win, and we are consistent in how we're picking up points as well, you never know. I'm not saying that we're gonna win the league, but I don't think it's just written in the stars. Yeah, he's in a massive purple patch at the moment, and it doesn't look like things are going to slow down for them. But also, Pep and City have the European Cup in their sights. You never know that they might put all their eggs in one basket and be like, right, European Cup, that's it. And he might even like rest Haaland in a couple of occasions and stuff, and it might not work out. And they may drop points towards the back end of the season. somewhere along, I don't know, but I'm not at that point where I'm just kind of like, oh, there's no point in playing now Rick, anymore.
He's scored 17 goals in 10 games. 17 in 10 games.
Well, mate, if I was in City's team, I would score none.
Yeah. 17 in 10 games, and he's got 3 assists. He's played 660. It's impossible. But this kid is, like, if he continues in this trajectory, Ronaldo and Messi will be a footnote in his career. That's what we're talking about. 14 goals. So 14 goals in 8 games in the Premier League. The Premier League is apparently the most difficult league to play in. The most difficult. It's the hardest league for any striker to play in. He's got 14 and 8. Playing for the best team in Europe, hands down. Doesn't matter
what they're 14. He's got 14, not 17.
14 and 8. And it includes Champions League. Or is that what? Champions League? Is that difficult? It sounds difficult. He's got another 3 in that difficult as well.
Wow.
17.
He scored more goals than a lot of teams this season.
Yeah, mate.
Most teams, actually.
Like Harry Kane, we've raved about him being the best forward in the Premier League for the last 10, 15 years. We talk about him scoring more goals than Thierry Henry. Arsenal fans bang on about Thierry Henry. Newcastle fans bang on about Alan Shearer, and so they should. All of them will be myths in this geezer's shadow. It's fucking unreal. It's like we need Roy Keane to come out of retirement and do a Haaland on him. That's the only thing we can take. We can wish for like a bad injury, because otherwise
he'll go to Madrid. I think he was angling for a move to Madrid, but they just didn't. Either they didn't have the money, or I don't know, something happened. Oh, for fuck's sake!
Is that dinner?
What's for dinner tonight, Rick?
I don't know. Actually, no idea.
Baked potato.
No,
I can smell it. Yeah,
oh, nice. Baked potato. All right, we'll let you go, boys, because we've been going on and on for the last hour, and this has been a difficult podcast, dude, because, you know, it's not nice losing to Arsenal, and but I think we've coped well. Cal, Rick, I think you've done well.
I feel all right, mate.
Yeah, bit better than when you was in your front room all alone with only your family surround you. And there's not a more single place that you can feel more alone when the people that you love more than anyone in the world can't give you any kind of solace. That is a deep kind of loneliness that anyone who doesn't follow football will never understand.
Flav messaged me on the Saturday, like mid afternoon, just to check in to see if it was all right.
I was worried about you.
I don't know why, but I feel it so much. Like everyone, like every motherfucker listening to this podcast, you would have felt the same as me. And there was a point that flashed in my mind. It's like, I'm just going to go into the kitchen and down a bottle of red wine. Just down it. And like, I was that, like, just fuck it. Like, I've got...
Should have done.
You know? Yeah, I know. I might do that now, actually. Yeah,
do it now. Start lashing out.
I was... Yeah, do it. Definitely do it. Just... But I was at the social.
Oh, yeah.
So...
It went well.
Yeah, I was at the social. Yeah, which was great. And actually, afterwards, the guy behind the bar said free Peroni for everybody after the game.
Do you know what
which is really nice?
What's super fucking cool about that is that the idea was that the Temple Brewhouse they come up with this idea that if Kane and Son had scored against Arsenal, they're going to give 100 free pints out of Moretti to celebrate Antonio Conte. And then when we lost, they did it anyway.
They did it anyway. He said, free Peroni until it runs out.
Did it run out?
Wicked.
Shit.
And it ran out.
Of course it ran out. Because we're fucking fun. Spurs. We're the boys. We're fucking lads, aren't we? Get your tits out. Anyway, this has been the Fighting Cock Podcast.
Shut your rat.
Well, again, you've always got to... There's always a line and you have to step over it, don't you, Cal?
There is no line in my house.
I know. I understand that. God, no, God for women. God forgive all the women that Cal has harmed. This has been the Fighting Cock Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. Hope you enjoyed it. Hope we give you some solace in this this dark place we find ourselves in, but it won't be forever because we've been here before. We're built for this shit. We're built for it, right? There's nothing they can do or say, no matter how good they are on the pitch, doesn't matter. There'll always be rats. And do you want to be a rat? I'd rather be an entity that doesn't react in the way that they do. Like, where they win, they're scum. They lose, they're scum. Whatever it is, they're not us. And they never will be us. That was the least inspiring thing I've ever done. Like, that was a shit outro to the podcast. But we are where we are. All right, up the Spurs.
Come on, you Spurs. Spurs.
Network.